With the power of the internet connecting Kansas City and Cape Girardeau, we bring you the marvelous Jesse and Chris. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Chris.
And we're here to talk about comics and junk.
That is generally what we talk about. Is it more comics or more junk?
Well, it depends on who you ask, I guess.
That is completely true. So, tonight we've got a pretty good schedule lined up for you. We have the ever-popular question segment that'll undoubtedly take up way more of the podcast than anything else. We got a few really good questions that I can talk about for 3 hours, so I'll try to keep it down. And then we're finally going to talk about Ant-Man because Jesse saw it.
Yay!
Yep, way to go, Jesse. And then if we have time, and I hope we do, we're gonna baselessly speculate about the X-Men show, which is what we meant to do 3 episodes ago.
So yeah, then I think since we do have some really great questions, but there are only 2 of them, so. Hopefully we should be able to keep ourselves contained this time.
All right, so let's just dive right in. The very first one is asked by Asa. Asa asks, is there a story arc slash book that everybody really loves but you hate, or vice versa? Which is kind of 2 questions. I guess it says or, so he's leaving it up to us. But I'll answer both. Why not? So what does everybody really love, but I hate? I guess it depends. So I'm really bad at hating things. There's certain things I hate. There's certain artists I hate, but I usually don't take it out on the whole story. Let's see. So Jesse, you like Hush, right? Batman Hush.
Yes.
And a lot of people like Hush. It sells very well. I don't like Hush. I get really bored by it. I think the stuff with Superman's kind of neat, but then I lose interest very quickly. And I wouldn't say it's not a bad intro to Batman if you've literally never read a comic, but I've only read it the one time and I've never wanted to read it again.
Oh yeah, I remember when I read Hush, it was actually Kevin Schenkelberg was buying up like every possible trade for Batman. And that was one he ended up getting, like that Long Halloween, and there's another one that he got that's really popular, and he let me borrow them. This was back in high school years. That was my first time reading it, and I remember liking it, but again, I was 16, 17, so that could explain why.
I know, there's some stuff that I read when I was younger, and I look back. Like, I really loved Secret Invasion when I was getting it, but I got, like, super into comics, and I got literally every Secret Invasion tie-in.
Oh my.
I know. And at the time, I loved Secret Invasion. But then when it ended, I was like, oh, that was kind of a lame ending. So for a while, I loved it, and some people were like, this is kind of crappy. And I'm like, are you kidding? This is great. But I had barely read any comics. So I was just like I had nothing to compare it to.
Right. And yeah, I could see that. I could see that being for Hush, too. So if you're looking to get into Batman...
it's funny, you could just read year one and then never read another, or then never read a better Batman comic, because year one is so good.
That's fairly accurate. year one was fantastic.
It is really good. And that's one that everyone loves, and I also love, so maybe year one's not good to talk about. What else is something that everybody loves that I hate? From sales alone, a lot of people liked All-Star Batman and Robin, but I don't like All-Star Batman and Robin. But I think most critics didn't like it either, so I don't know.
Yeah, if that's a good... I honestly think people were only buying it because it was Batman and Robin, and they were just hoping, like, well, it's Batman and Robin, so I might like it.
Well, and Frank Miller was writing it, so they were like, I remember Dark Knight Returns and Year One. Those were really good. Those are the best Batman stories ever. Maybe he's doing it again. Although I've heard of people who think that it's ironic, and that it's supposed to be Frank Miller making fun of people who did Dark Knight Returns Batman wrong after he did it. But if so, he's got to be going really deep on it.
It's like only the truest of the true fans will get this.
I know. So it's really tough, that stuff that everybody loves that I hate. Because I like a lot of like the comics everybody likes. I like Watchmen. I think I like it less than I like, less compared to when I used to. Like, I can see flaws in it. Like, it's not a perfect comic, but I mean, I don't think anything's a perfect comic. But it's, you know, it's I still love Watchmen. It's really good. I love The Dark Knight Returns still. Again, I can see the flaws in The Dark Knight Returns. Although, so a lot of people really love Frank Miller art, and I've never quite been into it as much as everybody else.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I like parts of it. That's still one of my favorite, like, the bat logo from Frank Miller's era. Like, that's still my favorite, and I don't know why.
Where the bat's, like, super big.
Yeah, like, basically the Batfleck logo.
Yeah, I like that. And I like, and the Dark Knight Returns is really great. When I first read Dark Knight Returns, I really didn't like his art. And I think it kind of grew on me. But then, like, I see some of his more recent art, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look that dissimilar. I don't know. I liked his art in Sin City, but I think it really fit the style. I think sometimes he tries to draw things where it's like, maybe just get another artist because that's not your style. So I don't know, like Frank Miller, a lot of people really like. I'm trying to think of any more arcs that everybody really loves, but I hate.
I know, like, Civil War was pretty popular, and I know you're not particularly fond of that one.
No, but like critically, that it, like a lot of people aren't super into that either. So that's kind of like All-Star in that way. I mean, it's not. No, I'm not saying it's as bad as All-Star Batman and Robin, because there are very few things to me that are as bad as All-Star Batman and Robin. Right. No, I'm not hot on Civil War. Except the art's pretty good. Some people really like Secret Wars from the 80s.
Yeah,
and I can't stand that comic.
I didn't think anybody did. Like every time I look at it, and to be fair, I only started looking into it when they announced Secret Wars for the All New, All Different and everything else, like the current event. And I was looking into old Secret Wars stuff because, you know, some people were saying, like, well, it'll be really helpful if you've read or heard of this. And everybody was like, no, stay far away from that. That's terrible.
I know some people are like, there's some people who do other comics podcasts who are super, super into it. And I guess they're just seeing something I'm not. Because I read the very first issue of it. Because I have Marvel Unlimited. I didn't even have to pay a dime for it other than what I paid for Marvel Unlimited. I was like, maybe I'll jump in and just... we'll just work my way through it. And I even like went in knowing it was going to, like, I had braced myself, but I was just like, oh, this is like, it's like, it was just like a slog. I just could not do it. I mean, it is well known that it was just there to sell toys.
Yeah.
And maybe with that in mind, like if you're like, oh, it's just there to sell toys, maybe you can see it from like a Transformers perspective. Cause I mean, the Transformers is kind of silly, but I used to like the Transformers. But I don't know. A lot of people don't like Secret Wars, so maybe that's not a good example. There is a lot of stuff that people hate that I love, or that people are kind of lukewarm on that I really love. Have you ever read Justice?
I don't think I have.
So Justice is Kruger. I can't remember his first name. And Alex Ross. So Alex Ross, the guy who does the paintings.
Yeah, he did the, because the art looks very similar for, like, Kingdom Come.
Same guy, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just really, like, really lukewarm on it. I don't know if they think that it's, like, actively bad, or if it's just a little garbagey. It's basically Super Friends. But I thought it really entranced me. Like, I dug through it, but a lot of people say it's a slog. But I also haven't read it since I first read it, so maybe I should just keep my fond memories. Because I bought it because Christy thought it would look really interesting, and I think she read it and liked it. So I don't know. On that same note, Jim Kruger also did Earth X.
Read Earth X.
It's effectively like Kingdom Come. But Marvel, kind of. I mean, that's not a perfect metaphor, but it's not.
Well, that was the review that was given to me when I was recommended EarthX.
But a lot of people really hate EarthX. I'm finding. There's things about it that are goofy. I don't know why Captain America is wearing the toga that is an American flag. I think if you, like, asked people, like, I think that's, like, improper use of the flag. I don't know. It is Captain America. He does whatever. And he also has like the scar on his forehead. Like he's like, but I only read Earth X. I didn't read Universe X or Paradise X. I just read Earth X and I kind of liked it. I thought it was, I mean, I don't really, it was kind of a weird, like they thought of an idea and then just tried to lead to it. But I really enjoyed reading it, and I've read it several times. So maybe that's one that people hate. Do you have anything that you think people like really hate that you were super into?
Well, I was informed slightly before the show that apparently Secret Wars isn't, or not Secret Wars, God damn it, Spider-Verse isn't all that popular.
Not amongst critics, no. And I know you really enjoyed Spider-Verse.
I really did. And though I have a real problem with, I have the world's thickest set of rose-colored glasses on anything Spider-Man.
Right.
Okay. For those of you that don't know, I'm one of, like, the 8 people that enjoyed Amazing Spider-Man 2.
There's bits of it I liked. I think I liked it when I was watching it, and then I just forgot, like, what happened. So I'm like, oh, clearly it wasn't good enough for me to remember it.
I could see that. I don't know. Basically, I watched it, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's got Spider-Man. He's doing Spider-Man things. Oh, that looks cool.
That looks cute. Okay.
And I didn't completely hate the dubstep electro scene, which is the, that was the scene. If everybody talks about, like, how much they disliked Amazing Spider-Man 2, they reference the dubstep scene. And I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was neat looking. I mean, do I think it's a 10 out of 10 movie? No. But I did like it. And I had fun watching it.
Sure.
But yeah, that's me with Spider-Man in general. So I don't. And so if you give me some like a Spider-Man story or anything Spider-Man that's like even reasonably good, I'm going to love the shit out of it.
I have a tendency to forgive bad writing if the art it blows me away.
That's also fair, and I can't think of a bad artist in Spider-Man recently. There have been some in the past, but...
And I think the Spider-Verse art is, like, perfectly, perfectly fine. So yeah. I think, like, when I was reading Spider-Verse, I was like, oh, this is fine, but I like the art. But, like, for example, a lot of people really don't like Bendis' new Guardians of the Galaxy. But Sarah Pacelli drew it, and so I'm in. Because I love me some Sarah Pacelli art. And I didn't even realize that people didn't like it. And I didn't realize it wasn't going anywhere because it's pretty slow moving. Because I was just like, oh, Sarah Pacelli, this is great. I love looking at all these pages.
And so I guess there is something to that with comic books. Like, even if you're not necessarily enjoying the arc, if you're just like staring at the comic book, like it's doing something all right.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like, for me, I don't know. I guess you can call me a sheep when it comes to what arcs are good and what arcs are bad, because I kind of generally agree. I mean, if people think that Spider-Verse isn't good, then I do disagree with that one. But yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anything else that I really love that people hate.
Right. And, yeah, but I know a lot of people are not super into Guardians. I don't think it's, like, universally hated, the Bendis Guardians, but he kind of made it more like the movie, and it really wasn't like the movie before.
Yeah, well, and I feel like that actually drew more readers in, because there were a lot of people that, you know, never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie, like Jesse over here. Well, no, I had heard of them, that's not fair, but I had never read anything Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie. So if I, you know, watch the movie, I'm like, I'm going to go catch up on some Guardians. And then I see, you know, what was happening in the comic book. I might be upset.
Yeah, especially like they canceled the Guardians of the Galaxy previous series, I think, to make this new series. And that has like a diehard fan base. Because Cosmic Marvel for a time was like super, super good. And it was run by like the same two guys, like Abnett and Lanning. Mm-hmm. They're like writing buddies, and I think it like some people took it pretty hard. Now I was not reading a whole lot of Cosmic Marvel, and I need to go back and do it because apparently it's excellent, but I guess I just wasn't as invested as they were.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because it was going for a really long time.
Yeah, it was. And I think it sold like well enough. It did have different people. I mean, It had all the same people that are in the movie, but it had some notable extras.
Right.
So that's a thing. But the Sarah Pacelli art, I was totally in on. Sarah Pacelli does such good art. I think I am always willing to forgive bad art. That is, or not bad art. I am not willing, like, if the art's bad, the writing has to be really good. So this is a little bit of a tangent, but I've been delving into my new X-Men omnibus finally. This is the Grant Morrison X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some art in the middle that is just like, I'm not into it. I kind of find it appalling. But I'm like, man, at least Grant Morrison's writing some good stuff here. Like, this art's really not doing it for me. Let's see. Is there any like particular artists who a lot of people think are good that you don't think is good? Like, for a while, I was not into Frank Quitely, but then I totally got into Frank Quitely. But I think he's almost like an acquired taste. He did Batman and Robin for a while. He did All-Star Superman. If you read All-Star Superman. He's doing something with Mark Miller right now called Jupiter Circle.
I don't know. Humberto Ramos is seemingly not all that popular, but...
Right, but I'm just wondering if there's any artists that you love that everybody hates.
Yeah, I can't think of any. Let me see.
Yeah. I used to not get Frank Kirby. Or not Frank Kirby, sorry. Jack Kirby.
Oh
my God. I used to not get it. And then eventually I got it and was like, okay, this is really awesome. But at first I was like, this just seems so old. But I think I was dumb. And then I was like, man, Jack Kirby, you are the man.
So I Googled real quick because I was kind of curious. I Googled worst comic artists just to see... Mm-hmm. See if there's a list out there that I could check on. The number two result for me was the 40 worst Rob Liefeld drawings.
How does it that we always come back to Rob Liefeld?
Because he's so popular and he's so bad.
I don't know if he's popular anymore, man. I think a lot of people didn't think he's bad. In the 90s, he was super popular.
I don't know. The dude is still drawing. He's not actively doing a comic book right now.
I actually think he is still. I forget what it is, but I care so little. But I think he might actually be doing like an indie comic. And I'm sure it's like over the top muscles and guns and all that stuff he likes.
Almost certainly. Well, I am looking at this, and I did find a little bit of a list, and there's a lot of people trashing Humberto Ramos. And I say to hell with you, commenters on this random forum that I'm checking out.
I don't mind Humberto Ramos. I think he's a-okay. I don't think like if I he's like my favorite artist, but I think he's good. But you really like Humberto Ramos.
I do.
Like, he's your dude.
I'm a big fan. I don't know why. I just really like his art style, like that slight cartoony style. I mean, we talked about it in length, obviously, last week. No, or last episode. Yeah, we talked about it in length, and I like Humberto Ramos. So, back off, haters.
Back off. Okay, so I think we've pretty properly addressed that 2-part question. So the next question comes from Shannon, and Shannon asks, what is the most frustrating series to keep up with due to all of the reboots, spinoffs, and variations? That's an interesting question because most of the series, when they have reboots, I kind of consider them a different series. If it's what's always weird to me is when they start over at a number one and it's the same creative team.
Yeah. And they're even continuing the story on.
Yeah. Like that happened with Captain Marvel. It was just like, oh, it's another number one. And I remember I was listening to an interview with Kelly Sue DeConnick, and I think like she didn't even have like it was clearly editorial, like it was not her, but she was just kind of like, yep, another number one, and just like I moved the topic on. So I don't know, like, and that is confusing. What's really frustrating for me is I want to go back and read Thor, because there was a time where I read a lot of Thor, and then I read Jason Aaron's Thor. And which is also the, and then into the female Thor, like Thor God of Thunder, and then I think the new one's just called Thor. By the way, that's two separate series, and that's a little frustrating. because it's still Jason Aaron writing Thor. I know it's a different character, so at least that makes sense. But that was a little frustrating. But it was like I was trying to find it, and there was like the Mighty Thor and Thor God of Thunder, and there was a series that was just Thor. And on Marvel Unlimited, that is very hard.
Yeah.
To slog through because everything's in alphabetical order. So Mighty Thor is going to come way before Thor and Thor God of Thunder. It's also that way with Hulk. Like I'm trying to figure out where Hulk went after there was a series just called Hulk, because there was an Incredible Hulk and then an Indestructible Hulk.
I actually really did like that Indestructible Hulk storyline. I don't know. I don't know if you ever got into it or not.
But. I have no. I'm trying to, but I don't know when I'm supposed to when I'm supposed to read it after.
I think it was part of the Marvel Now. I want to say you can honestly just jump into Indestructible Hulk number one, because the whole idea behind that particular story was just the tagline for it was Hulk destroys, Banner builds. He basically sells out the Hulk to S.H.I.E.L.D. so that in exchange for unlimited funding to work on projects, like projects to benefit humanity, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's neat.
And he gets his own little team of people that he handpicked, and all of them have like weird social issues and stuff like that. Well, not necessarily social issues, but they all have baggage. He kind of picked them up like that. I don't remember why I stopped reading it, but I got to like issue 8 or 9. I think I got to a point of just being stupid broke and had to stop reading a lot of comic books that I was enjoying, but not so loving.
I've increased my pull list capacity by promising to Christy that I'll only get water at restaurants. And she's like, that would save us like $25 a month. And I'm like, comics? Right.
What a fantastic compromise.
Yeah. Well, she likes some too. Like we've been reading Batgirl recently because they kind of rebooted Batgirl. And yeah. So I think she kind of wants to read some too. But she always gets water, so I have no excuse. So here's the Hulk. The Hulk returned periodically in Hulk, which then starred the new Red Hulk. This was in like the 2008 or 2009. And then in September 2009, I'm reading off Wikipedia, by the way. In September 2009, The Incredible Hulk was relaunched as The Incredible Hulk Volume 2 at issue 600. Then there was The Incredible Hulks. It was retitled. And then it was replaced with Incredible Hulk Volume 4. Then as part of Marvel Now, it was Indestructible Hulk. And then it was replaced in 2014 by The Hulk.
Okay.
That's 6 years and I think how many titles? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 7 titles in 6 years.
Yeah, that's insane.
That I can see how that could be really frustrating. And Marvel does it a lot. And I am a Marvel apologist till the day I die. And I can't even talk about, like, some of their decisions recently have been kind of crappy. And I will not like speak for Marvel in that way. But like when they relaunch stuff, I'm usually okay with it, because a lot of times it's like, oh, it's a new creative team. And I'm sure if I would have been following along with Hulk at the time, I probably wouldn't have cared. Because a lot of it, like, Mark Waid wrote some of it, and Mark Waid's my dude. And Jason Aaron wrote some, and I love Jason Aaron. But, that, like, if, let's say, Johnny Hulk fan, who is like, I just saw Avengers 2, and I want to catch up with the Hulk, and I want to read Hulk. I want to start with Planet Hulk and go on. Because I feel like that's a good spot to start with the Hulk.
Oh, Planet Hulk is great.
Planet Hulk's fantastic. You'd have to read like 8 different titles and figure it all out.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot of catching up. And I also hate it when Marvel does that. You're kind of moving back to the a brand new number one, but picking up the story right where it left off with the same creative team and the same characters. Superior Spider-Man.
Did Superior Spider-Man have more than one volume?
No.
Like, did it have more than one number one?
It only had one number one.
Well, thank God for that.
I mean, it. They may as well have called it Amazing Spider-Man 701, because it was, everything was the same. It was just a story arc where Doc Ock had taken over Peter Parker's body.
Right. Yeah, and it was a clear continuation from Amazing Spider-Man.
Right, and I mean that's what it was designed to be and everything. And I guess the benefit to it is, like, and I've talked about this, I think, on literally every episode, how Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man was, you know, so long running that nobody was wanting to jump in because they had to jump in at issue 600 something. So it makes sense for them to do it at that point, but I've seen Marvel do it at, like, after issue 25, like, all right, new number one. Well, are we changing this? What are we doing, anything different? The characters, like, anything changing? Nah, just new issue one.
Yeah, just go. Yeah, well, just what is go it, with like, Ms. Marvel's getting relaunched with an issue one, literally the same creative team.
Yeah, well, that's supposed to be in all new, all different, right?
Right. It is so all new, all different. At least they're doing it with everything.
Right. Because, yeah, I think that was the thing they wanted to do. Like, in All New, All Different, they wanted everything to be issue number one.
Right, but this has happened multiple times. Like, they did it with Marvel Now, for the most part.
True.
So it is funny that they do that. I don't know if there's any series that's frustrating more in one way than another. If you're trying to keep up with certain characters, sometimes it's crazy because they'll go from one team to the other. If any of you are Runaways fans, they show up in a bunch of different books after Runaways, and it's hard to keep up.
Or even just, like, good luck with keeping up with Venom.
Yeah, he's been five different people, and
yeah, like, if you just really like Venom, I have a lot of respect for you if you've managed to stick with it. Because that dude, like, he's been on, in the last, I think, 5 years even, he's been on at least four different teams that I can think of off the top of my head. And coming out of All New, All Different, he's going to be in, like, three different books.
He's in his own book where he's a space knight. A knight of space.
And I'm going to read that one.
I know you're going to read that one. Oh, I on a different subject, I submitted my pull list for my Marvel comics to my comic store this week. So I finally, like, actually made decisions. Some of them are kind of pending. Like, I kind of want to try Incredible or Invincible Iron Man, but I'm definitely willing to drop it if need be, because I have not liked an Iron Man comic in a long time.
Yeah, I hear you. I heard that Superior Iron Man was really good.
I heard it, but he's also, like, a jerk, and I just don't know if I need to read it about people who are jerks. I mean, I'll probably read it at some point. But, like, yeah, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, same creative team, being relaunched with an issue one. And it started, I think, in January. So it's gotten, like, five or six issues out the door. And it's going to already have another number one.
Well, shit, isn't Spider-Gwen doing the same thing? Like, I think Spider-Gwen's getting a number one after an all-new, all-different.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's had, like, five issues. Spider-Woman's right. At 10 and is getting an all-new number one.
And then... I want to say Silk is did we just see if have I seen if Silk is getting her own number one?
Silk's getting her own book. Did she have a solo book before?
Yeah, she has a solo book right now. Yeah. It's on issue getting 10.
Getting another number one.
And that's a brand new character too. Like,
brand new. Debuted, I think, in 2013.
Yeah. So yeah, and then I've also talked about before with you know, in terms of the spinoffs and stuff. My hatred of how DC handled Green Lantern in the New 52.
So before New 52, for the most part, okay, so what could you read? It was like Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps for a while. So if you wanted all your Green Lantern stuff, all you needed to do was read two books, and they were very distinctly separate. They'd have crossovers at times, but there were long periods where Green Lantern Corps was doing its own thing, and Hal Jordan and Green Lantern was doing his own thing. And then in New 52, I think it was what? Oh, no, then they did Emerald Warriors, which I didn't pick up because I was already starting to get sick of this. I'm like, nope. They had Green Lantern New Guardians.
Yes. Green Lantern Corps.
Red Lanterns.
Yes.
And then they spun off a Sinestro book at some point.
Yes. So at one point, and the bad part about that, like, instead of the occasional crossover, all five books were very interlinked. So if you wanted the full story, most of the time you were buying all five Green Lantern books.
Right. I mean, I'm also like a big X-Men fan, but X-Men is notorious for doing this pretty much its entire publication history.
Yeah. So X-Men, you really just kind of have to, like, if you're still an X-Men fan, you have grown to deal with it.
Right. You're just you have enough Stockholm syndrome.
Right.
You're just like, give me the books. It's like, it's only three this time.
It's like, I have convinced myself that I am okay with having to buy two books a month because, you know, that's how I get all the story. And I like that because I like that much X-Men every month.
If I don't have mutants in at least two or three books every month, I will die. And that's literally started with the second X-Men book, New Mutants. Once New Mutants came out, you pretty much had to be reading both. Once X-Factor came out after that, you pretty much had to be reading all three.
Yeah.
I think Excalibur was the first quote-unquote X-Men book, because I'd still say it's an X-Men book, but it also had, like, Captain Britain and stuff in it that was, like, separate. And I'm sure it crossed over plenty of times.
Right. Yeah, it's... Yeah. Like, X-Men is definitely one of those ones that's, like, the best X-Men has ever been for readers was actually recently when you really only had to be reading All New and Uncanny, and you got all the X-Men. Like, that was one X-Men self-contained story.
That's true. And if you wanted to be reading about Wolverine's people, there was Wolverine and the X-Men, or Amazing X-Men, but they, even though they were the same characters, they did fairly distinct stuff.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing, too. And apparently, like, there's only three... Okay, if you don't count the two Wolverine books, there's only going to be three X-Men books in October. Like, total, which is insane. Normally, like, I don't think it's been less than eight in years.
Yeah, it's been pretty nuts. Especially, obviously, if you count the Wolverine books. Like, yeah, eight, nine. I imagine... I can't think of a particular time, but I want to say there was a time where there were 10 books for X-Men happening concurrently.
I am positive that's true. I can't think of a particular instant, but I am so positive that's true.
Yeah.
And it always sucks when it's like, all right, now it's time for Messiah Complex. Better get all these books.
Yeah, because that's the worst part when they have, you know, the big crossover event, and it's just like, all right, I know that you don't read any of the other eight X-Men books, but for this event, you're gonna need to.
You gotta.
So you're spending literally, what does that end up being? Like, if eight books, $24 minimum, $32 more likely in a month on one story?
I know. Ugh, it's a lot. I also like what's happened recently on the DC side, because they're not immune to this either. Oh, we talked about Green Lantern, so we already got the dish on DC a little.
Yes.
Batgirl, at issue I think 34, the trade was given a new volume one.
Yeah,
they had a different creative team
because they changed. That was the big Batgirl like outfit change where she was no longer a sex object.
Right. Yeah. Which is, yeah, they kind of made her a little more like, I don't know.
Tomboyish, like, almost I don't know.
I've read that comic, but yeah, she's definitely like a little bit less va-va-va-boom.
Right.
And it's good. I've been reading it. It's really excellent. But it's funny that they just started over with a volume one all over again. I don't know if I'd say she was a sex object
before. No, I mean, like, she was just... She definitely wasn't the sexiest thing in the Batman universe. Like, in terms of how she was drawn. But, yeah, she was still attractive. But I really can't... Like, when you compare her to some of the other people in that universe, like Poison Ivy or Harley Quinn or
right.
Catwoman, then, yeah, she looks much more tame.
Right, although, yeah, people really liked the new outfit because it was, like...
Oh, I'm not saying I disliked the outfit. Like, no, it was good. Outfit, yeah.
The new outfit's sweet.
Yeah.
It has, like, space, I think. Like, some of her previous outfits, you're like, where does she keep her gear? I don't even know if she has, like... She doesn't have, like, pockets or anything.
she doesn't even have much of a utility belt. What's happening?
Right. So, yeah, it is pretty good. But I guess it's because it was like, even the tone's different with that one. But it is kind of weird that it's like volume one, and then you realize you're in issue 34, and you're like, what?
No, wait a minute. Shouldn't be right.
this is weird. I mean, Batman's always been that way too. Like, if was it Endgame had some crossovers. Death of the Family had a bunch of crossovers. I think Batman is the DC offender of that more than a lot of things. And that's Green Lantern kind of is though. God, Green Lantern. And I used to love Green Lantern.
Green Lantern recently, especially. I think Batman has been consistently the big offender because like he always has. I mean, there are minimum four books at any point, like at any given time, there are four Bat books. And Batman may not necessarily be featured in each of those four books, but he's there.
Batman has not had a single book, I think, since like the 30s or 40s. Once Batman the book premiered, apart from Detective Comics, it was just Batman and Detective Comics just going for it.
Right. And I mean, even like when the New 52 came out, there were, you know, Detective Comics, there was the main Batman story, there was Batman Incorporated, and there was Batman and Robin.
Right, and that's literally just things with the name Batman in them. There was also Batwoman, Batgirl, and then I think there was a Robin comic or some kind of Robin comic.
Nightwing had his own.
I mean, he's Grayson now, but yeah, right. still doing it. So yeah, Batman's the big one. Batman's like the Wolverine of DC, and that he's just everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And he's also, you know, DC's biggest Mary Sue, kind of like how Wolverine is probably Marvel's.
Yeah. At least, yeah. They both have pathos, but then you're like, these people, like, they're fantastic at everything.
Right.
Right. Okay, so So that's the questions, Jesse. I think we actually have time to talk about things.
We do have time to talk about things. We have at least 15 minutes. Okay.
Oh, 15 minutes? Let's talk about Ant-Man because you finally saw it.
I did finally see it. All right. So my movie trio, shout out to Stephanie and Krista, which I don't think listen to this show, but either way, shout out.
Do they not? Do they not like comics?
Krista kind of likes comics, Stephanie not so much. They're both into the Marvel movie verse, but yeah, like as far as comics go, they're kind of meh. So yeah, but we finally went and saw Ant-Man before Krista left us to head down to New Orleans. And yeah, it was really, really good.
I was surprised. I was kind of expecting something kind of bad. Not to say that I did, like, I mean, Marvel has a pretty good track record. And I, like, who knows what would have happened if Edgar Wright stayed with it since he left the film. I forget when. I think a year or two ago, Edgar Wright left the movie.
I have no idea.
So Edgar Wright is the director of a little known film, called Shaun of the Dead. And Hot Fuzz, which are, you know, excellent. And he was doing Ant-Man, and he had some creative differences. And it, from what I know of Edgar Wright, he is kind of a perfectionist, and he wants things his way. Which, you know, if you're a director, like, why shouldn't you get that? But that's kind of like a difficult attitude to have when you're working in such a big cinematic universe.
Right. I mean, when you've got to, like, keep to the rules of, you know, eight other movies, like, it becomes kind of difficult to get your own way.
So he had to leave the movie. Well, he left it by his own choice. And I don't think Marvel didn't like bash him, and he didn't bash Marvel, but they just had some differences. So another director came in. And so some people were kind of worried about this movie, but I generally thought it was pretty good. I have a few issues with it. And it's more like just like, I guess like progressive issues. Like, it's funny that his only minority friends were all criminals. Granted, all of his friends were pretty much criminals.
Right. Pretty much but every friend that he had, except for obviously Hank Pym and his daughter.
Right. but like nobody else, everybody else in the movie was white except his criminal friends. So that was kind of.
Sam Wilson made an appearance. He had a little cameo.
Oh, that's true. Sam Wilson wasn't there. I don't know. I wouldn't have called him like an Ant-Man character.
No, definitely not. Like, he was just, he happened to be the Avenger that was guarding the base.
Not to say that that Peña, what's his first name, didn't like steal the show, because he was hilarious. Michael Peña, he was his friend who would like be like, "All right, I was out with my cousin at a wine tasting."
And he's like, just the facts, please, just the facts.
Well, what's funny is it's funny that he was supposed to be like a criminal and he did all this highbrow stuff. Like he'd be like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to go to a wine tasting. Oh, and I'm going to was it like a gallery?
Yeah, and, you know, like an really art show and shit. Yeah,
I really like impressionism. That was really, really funny.
Yeah, I liked that. I also liked I liked the Russian guy. So at least one of the criminal friends was white, sort of.
Okay. Yeah, but that's but it was also funny that I thought when before I saw the movie that Hope Van Dyne was going to be the Wasp at some point.
Yeah,
and she wasn't like he wasn't like, "Here's the suit," till the movie was over, and I was kind of bummed about that.
I was also kind of bummed because I just figured that would happen. Like, you know, at some point she was just going to come in the suit and save the day.
Because she kind of seemed like the badass of that movie. Like, it was pretty clear.
Yeah, she definitely was the badass of that movie.
Like, it was pretty clear that, like, she probably would have done it better than Scott Lang.
Yep.
which, not just, like, Paul Rudd was good in it. And so that was also the best CGI I think I've ever seen when they did Michael Douglas's like younger face in the 80s.
Oh yeah. Well, that was really good.
It was really good.
Apparently, like I actually thought they had another actor at first and I was like, "Wait a minute. That is Michael Douglas.
That is Michael Douglas. They took some of his footage from his movies in the 80s and kind of went with it.
That's too good. Like That was so good.
It was excellent. It wasn't like super, super incredible, amazing, but I did really have, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It's interesting that it kind of hinted at, spoilers, at like other realms.
Yeah. Because it talked about like the subatomic realm and that kind of thing. And it was neat. It was neat.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, especially like I said, more than I thought I was going to. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty good.
And I think honestly, you probably helped for how much I enjoyed that movie, mostly because if I went into that expecting, you know, a superhero movie like Avengers or, you know, any of like the ones where they actually have powers, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. I might have been a little disappointed. But going into it expecting like comic book Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it is very like, it's very like comic-y heist.
Yeah, I going into it thinking like that, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. And I actually thought Paul Rudd did a really good job as Scott Lang. Honestly, most of the casting was pretty fantastic. I did notice the whole every single person in the movie except for those criminal friends are white, but yeah
that was kind of a bummer. Hopefully they'll do better at that in the future. All right, how are we doing on time, Jesse? Can we talk a little about the X-Men show?
Yes, we could talk about the X-Men show for at least 5 minutes.
I don't know, do you just want to end early and talk about it next time?
I think we have to talk about it a little bit, or it's just going to be a recurring theme. Like, will
That's
they?
True. That's true. We should talk about it at least.
We're hitting like Dragon Ball Z levels of.
We're pulling. Was the gag on Jimmy Kimmel where he kept saying like, "Oh, we don't have time to talk to Matt Damon," and he just kept doing it. Fox is apparently trying to work on an X-Men show. But that's all we know about it. But Jesse and I wanted to kind of baselessly speculate it was going to be about, a little bit. I guess we could probably do that in 5 minutes. Yeah. I really want it to take place in the 60s and be about them as teenagers.
that would be interesting, especially like if they try to tie it into, you know, the movie where it's, you know, current era, but Batman's been at it for a really long time.
Batman?
Like, yeah.
We're talking about X-Men, right?
Oh, shit, yeah. I don't know where I'm at. Hi, everybody. I'm keeping. I was trying to keep. I was thinking about doing a little gag thing there, where we still didn't talk about X-Men the show. I failed miserably. Lack of communication, really. Poor planning on my part. Anyway, so X-Men show, yes, 60s teenagers, that would be awesome. I would also like to see, basically, as long as it's not X-Men Evolution, I don't want to see them in high school like they're trying to be normal kids in current day.
I wouldn't mind New Mutants either, but I know they're making a New Mutants movie, so I kind of don't think that could happen. I also would not mind if they made a show of Wolverine and the X-Men, but that would be tough because Wolverine and the X-Men's real weird, so I feel like there'd have to be a lot of like special effects and stuff.
There was, did you see like a, the show is canceled now, but there was a Wolverine and the X-Men.
I watched a lot of it and it was really good.
Yeah,
it's interesting that they're trying to do a live action though. What characters are you going to use when you already have a successful movie franchise?
That's also true because, well, there are quite a few characters that haven't really gotten a whole lot of airtime. Like Colossus never showed up a whole lot.
Or Colossus. Nightcrawler only got one movie.
Right. And I feel like with CG now, they could really do a whole lot more with Nightcrawler than they did in the original X-Men.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know. It would definitely be interesting to see if they actually did try to do like an era thing where they were in the 60s, just kind of do like X-Men First Class, just that whole time period.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
But the only downside to that is it would kind of go against the movies because
they're like kids in the 80s apparently.
Right. And on top of that, even when they were like on top of that, after the events of X-Men First Class, Xavier closed down the school completely, and there was basically no mutant activity until the next movie.
Well, that's all been retconned at the end of Days of Future Past.
That's true. That is true.
So they can kind of do whatever they want, I guess. I wouldn't mind the Young X-Men, that series in the mid-2000s. That would be kind of neat.
I don't know that I ever watched that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a comic.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying now. I was like, I've never heard of that show.
For very long, but it was kind of like, ever so often they do like a, these are the new Young X-Men series.
Hmm. That's, yeah, okay, yeah.
But, I don't know.
I could see that being neat. I love baseless speculation.
It's the best.
They could do, like, it would be kind of neat since they've already, you know, approached time travel. If they did like an all new X-Men kind of a thing where they just brought a bunch of X-Men from the past and they're stuck in the future.
Oh, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. So you could keep it, you know, current era and stuff like that. And you could have some, you could even introduce a few new mutants, but like you bring from the past, like teenage Jean Grey and Scott Summers.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And then you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, any of your characters conflicting with characters in the movie series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in on that. That could be cool. So many things could be cool.
I know. Well, we don't know anything about it, so.
Yeah, we don't even know if it's actually happening. So for those of you that are getting really excited about what we're talking about here, they have said they might do a live action TV show.
That is being talked about.
Yeah, that is literally all the information that's out there. Anything you've just heard from us. Is like, man, wouldn't it be neat?
Right. I think Jesse and I have maybe talked more about the show than they Fox, have.
Almost certainly.
So, yeah. I guess that's all we have for you guys this week.
Yep. So, guys, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. We have, for those of you that haven't noticed, moved to a bi-weekly schedule. So we'll be talking to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we might move to a weekly schedule at some point. It's just difficult for Dad Chris.
Yep, Dad Chris, and then the busy schedule of Podzilla 1985 in general.
I know, like, Jesse on 15 podcasts.
Yeah, it's I'm actually going to record one right now.
All right,
So have a good night, folks.
Bye.